Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good afternoon, and welcome, my friends, to Web Sleuths Radio. It's your only true crime radio show, only one you can find anywhere in the world. Now, I just found out, it's very interesting research. Research says that 9 out of 10 doctors have no idea who we are. But if they did, they would love us. Trust me. I have a big announcement for us tonight. Web Sleuths is very proud to announce its new partnership with Sue Pruitt, also known as Web Sleuths member, So Sue Me. Now, Sue has been a member of Web Sleuths since early 2009, and she definitely shares our passion for helping victims, the families of victims, and the many causes supported by Web Sleuths. I'm so excited she's joining us. Sue has many years of experience in administrative management, and I'm very happy to announce the creation of our full partnership. So please accept Sue with open arms as we strive for international growth. That's right, international growth of Web Sleuths. Sue will assist me as I become more involved with media relations and the fostering of Web Sleuths Radio, trying to get those 9 out of 10 doctors to love us, among other things. Now, please remember, Sue is now a full-fledged forum goddess and should be treated as such. She's very sweet. You'll love her. And if you'd like to get to know Sue better after the show, we'll have a thread in our websleuths.com parking lot that says, Get to Know Sue Better. So join us after the show, websleuths.com for members, and just go into the parking lot. You can check out the thread right there. We have 3 guests today on Web Sleuths Radio. A little bit later on, we will welcome Dr. Dan Harrington and his wife, Jill. Their daughter, Morgan, would have been 22 today had she not been brutally murdered in October of 2009. Morgan disappeared during a Metallica concert, and her body was found in a very unusual place. You're going to be stunned when you hear how hard the Harringtons have had to work to keep their daughter's name in the media. You wouldn't think they'd have to do any work at all at keeping the media interested, but that's exactly what they've been doing, and they have a lot to tell us. It's going to be a fascinating and also heart-wrenching interview. We'll talk with them a bit later. First up, a case where the media won't go away, and a case that we are still talking about because we want to rip open steel doors with our teeth. We are so mad at the verdict. Casey Anthony. With us tonight is bounty hunter Leonard Padilla. Love him or not, Leonard has a lot of knowledge about the Anthonys and the case in general. Now, one thing that drives me nuts is when I see Leonard on other TV shows and he's telling a fantastic story, he's giving us information, and they interrupt him and don't let him finish, and they just, you know, cut him right off. I want to smack my TV. I want to hear what he has to say. And I'll admit that most of the time, what Leonard says, I love, but there are times I want to reach in and grab him by his cheeks and yell, what are you talking about? Well, tonight, we'll let Mr. Padilla finish his thoughts, and I promise I won't yell at him. Welcome, Mr. Leonard Padilla. How are you tonight?
Good evening. How are you doing?
Everything's fine great. With me. Good. I understand, I've been told by a little birdie, that you have a law degree. Is that true?
Yes, I do. Yes. 1980. Okay. I graduated from Lincoln Law School. I used my GI Bill after I got out of the military and went to law school. After 4 years of law school and getting my degree, I decided that what I wanted to do was open a law school. So I also own an evening law school for individuals that can't afford to go to law school.
Now, that's interesting. I bet that was that certainly kept you busy. But you, in the daytime, you were a bounty hunter. At night, you ran a law school?
Well, basically, my day job is, day and night, is bounty hunting. But I have some good people that work with me in keeping the law school going. Most of them are graduates of the law school itself in the past 30 years. Actually, it's been around since 82.
Wow.
And
okay.
These are all individuals that at one time or another didn't have a high school diploma, or they came in off the streets, or they had been in prison for one thing or another. And they had a tough time, and they all wanted to study law. So I said, okay, let's open a law school that opens the doors to people that are having a tough time getting into their regular law schools. And you get a regular law degree, you get to take the bar, and you get to practice law. I have 300 attorneys practicing in California now.
That's fantastic. I had no idea. So is the law school still open, or what's going on?
Yes. No, it's there. It's the Lorenzo Patino Law School. You can look up. It's got a website and everything here in Sacramento, California. It's an evening law school.
That is what a great idea. Hey, if you have a question for Leonard, you can call us at 760-825-0933. Or if you're calling from a landline, we do have a toll-free number for you, 877-665-1565. Okay, Leonard, you're one of the few people who's been close to the Anthony family, and you can talk about the experience. You bailed out Casey and spent time with the family, okay? A lot of people believe that George lied on the stand on several occasions, and I believe that that's one of the reasons why Casey was found not guilty. What kind of person do you think George is? Is he a stand-up guy? He seems to me he's a stand-up guy, but he seems he's terrified of Cindy. Have I got that right or wrong?
You got both right. He's a stand-up guy, and he's in fear of Cindy. Cindy is a person that if she gets her hooks and her fear into you, you have a tough trial. I've seen individuals that were around her at the time that came to fear her, and she won't let up. George is one of these. See, George has had a couple of escapades during their marriage, and she holds that over his head. And George did lie. He lied about the fact that Casey left the next morning, the 16th of June. That was not true. She ran out of there the night before. That's why she always, on the 911 calls, always referred to it as 31 days that her child had been missing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, George lied about not having an affair with the young lady. He did have an affair. And George gets himself into things that cops can get in and out of when they're cops. But
yeah.
When cops retire, they have to lay down certain things like their badge, and they have to lay down their ability to get away with certain things, which just George just didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say, let me go back to what you said about Casey says it's 31 days. What do you think happened that night? Explain why you think she says that all the time.
Well, what happened is when Cindy came home from her dad's rest home that evening, Casey came home. Cindy had been swimming with the child. She did. Casey did put the child, gave her a warm bath, put her in bed. And then they started discussing the fact that Cindy had been told by her mother that Casey had stole $320-some from her account. Casey did it in order to pay her phone bill. They got in a big, horrendous argument, and Casey had Cindy's hands around her throat, and they were screaming and hollering, and this could be verified with the neighbors. It could be verified with Jesse Grund. It could be verified with Lee. Subsequently, Casey grabbed the child and ran out of the house. This is why the child had no shoes and no socks when she was found. She didn't have the ability to take her to Tony Lazaro's house at night. She could not take the child there at night. During the day was okay, but not at night. So she, as she had been doing, used a little chloroform to put her to sleep. And she had used Xanax prior to that. She didn't quibble about mentioning certain things when my associate Tracy was staying there with her those 9 days and nights, 24/7. Chloroform did come up in the discussion as a way to put people to sleep. So it wasn't a secret to us when later on, subsequently, we heard about the comment about the chloroform thing. It was a situation where, you know, it was something she had discussed with Tracy. Very openly, not secretively. She ran out of the house with the child. She drove around till about 5 in the morning. She realizes now she's got a child that's in the seat. Dead. She's dead. Don't know what to do. Well, puts her in the trunk of the car, wrapped in a blanket, goes over to Lazaro's. The next day, that evening, the 16th, they go to Blockbuster, rent a couple of movies. The next morning, the 17th, she gets up. She borrows Lazaro's Jeep to drive over to a friend of hers house. He's busy. She then goes over to the Sawgrass Apartments. That's where she runs into Zenaida Gonzalez. Zenaida's there to rent an apartment. She's got two of her kids. She's driving a New York plated Hyundai Silver. Looks like a Ford Focus, but it's only a Hyundai. And she makes a mental note, goes in the office, gets the rest of the information. The 18th, she backs her car with the body into the garage at home. She's going to go in there and bury her, borrows the baby, the neighbor's shovel, going to bury her in the backyard, lays the body down. That's why the cops got hit. The dirt's too hard. She's not going to work that hard. She then decides, okay, I'll put her in a couple of garbage bags. I'll make it look like a kidnapping when the body's found. Here's some tape. I'll put it across her mouth. That's why the doctor said that the tape was put on there post-mortem. The baby had already been dead 2.6 days when she put her in the bag. If you look at the FBI reports that were released on August the 27th, they say the body decomposition in the car trunk was 2.6 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's if you measure it from 3 a.m. on the 16th to 4 p.m. on the evening, or the afternoon of the 18th, you get 2.6 days of decomposition. On the 24th, when her dad almost gets to the trunk of the car, she panics, drives down to the dead end, dumps the body off in the brush, and now she's got a torn bag while she's getting the body out of the trunk. The bag is torn. She's got all sorts of problems. She doesn't know what to do, but she's got this mess on, you know, like decomposition fluids on her body, on her clothes. She's got decomposition in the trunk of the car that's reeking to high heaven, but she's got rid of the body.
Mm-hmm.
She then, on the 27th, tells Amy Huizenga, hey, my dad ran over a couple of squirrels or something, the horrible smell in the car. But the evening of the 26th or the 27th, she parks the car at the Amscot, and on the 30th, it gets towed to the wrecking yard where the Anthony's pick it up on the 15th of July.
That is,
in the meantime, she knows she's got a dead child, she knows the child's gone, and Casey is the type of person that just forgets about something. 20 minutes later, it's over with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she did. And went on to party, get her tattoo, write checks on Huizenga's account.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's over.
Oh, that's just, it's still so unbelievable to everybody. Were you surprised by the verdict? Well, yeah, just everything that she's done is just shocking. Were you surprised by the verdict?
I sat stunned for at least a day.
Really?
Now,
why were you surprised? Talk to me.
Because, well, here's the thing, though. I didn't put myself in the juror's chair all the time. I was basing it a lot on what I knew. Now, here are the things that Baez did not win that case.
Mm-hmm.
Ashton lost it. Early on, when Baez was talking to his client in jail, Casey, somewhere between the 17th of July and the 11th of August, she told Baez, the baby drowned, my dad took her out of the pool, we went around the corner, we hid the body. But she didn't mean that the baby had drowned on purpose. She used that as an excuse for Baez. If, you know, her dad was watching the baby, he was careless.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that the dad did away with the body, you know.
Right.
Now, the cops overheard that conversation. The cops had the body's location and the accidental drowning and all that stuff story. But they couldn't go out and find the body themselves because then they'd be in some kind of a dilemma for actually overhearing a client attorney privileged conversation.
Mm-hmm.
They maneuvered it to where they got the information to a young lady that works in the jail in the custody section, Michelle Carpentier.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Carpentier is Roy Klunk's live-in girlfriend. She's the one that then starts the ball rolling about, hey, you ought to go over there and look for the body, et cetera, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the same individuals were involved with her that were involved in getting $5,000 for Tim Miller of EquiSearch back in August, in the latter part of August, 25th, 26th, 27th. When he came into the scene, got in an argument with Cindy, he was going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Cops said, no, stick around. Go over there by the school, see if you can find the body. Here's $5,000. Hurricane Faye came in at that time, dumped 4 to 10 feet of water all over that place. And Tim didn't want to lose his equipment, so Tim didn't look for the body any more than just a cursory look.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he'd have found the body real quick. But he didn't, because there was too much water. So they're stuck. Law enforcement now is stuck with Roy Klunk. And on the 11th, 12th, and 13th, Roy Klunk's out there looking, but he's 72 feet away from where the body was dumped. The body was dumped when she gets out of the trunk of the car. She takes two steps, falls over some building blocks, dumps the body. That's why the body's only 19 feet from the edge of the road.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mowing strip that's 5 foot wide. The car itself is another 5 foot wide. She takes two strips now, two steps. She's 14 feet into the brush. She dumps the body by a log. That's the 19 feet. She tells Baez about the building blocks that she tripped over. She got all this stuff all over her. It's just a mess. When Klunk goes out there and starts his looking, And if you listen to those tapes for the 11th, 12th, and 13th, you'll understand why he was trying to get somebody to the area, but he himself didn't want to have physical contact. He just didn't know what he was into. But mm-hmm. he started with some building blocks, but his building blocks that he started at are right by the edge of the road, not
okay.
16 feet off the road in the brush. His, you can see. He, you can also see, to this day, I was there 2 weeks ago, you can still see what he describes as a pool cover, which is not a pool cover. It's one of these garden umbrellas that you pop up. It's still there, 72 feet away from where the body was eventually located when he got redirected in December and told, no, you're too far, get closer to the fence.
Leonard, I have a question.
Ashton couldn't use any information of that nature. He was afraid to call Tracy in. He was afraid to call me in. He was afraid to call Robin. He was afraid to really, really dwell on Roy Kronk. He never called Michelle Carpentier, who worked at the jail, and absolutely couldn't put the cops on there and say, well, wait a minute, didn't you listen to a conversation where that told you where the body was? And the cops themselves couldn't go out and get the body themselves. They mm-hmm. couldn't get the body. They'd have lost their pensions. They'd have been fired.
Leonard, how do you know this? I mean, to me, it sounds all very logical, and I don't have any problem, you know, necessarily believing it, but how do you know this?
Okay. There was only one way. If you listen to Kronk's calls, there's only one way and one reason for Kronk to be there on the 11th, 12th, and 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to the calls.
Okay.
He's looking for a body. He's looking for parts, skull, white objects.
Mm-hmm.
When is the first time that law enforcement came out and said the child is dead because there's decomposition in the trunk of the car? August 27th.
Okay.
Kronk is out there on the 11th, 12th, and 13th of August.
I see.
That's after Baez has visited Casey Anthony, his client.
Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I see what you're saying. I see.
How does Kronk get it in his mind that if there's a white skull or an object? I mean, fast forward to December, he says he picked up the bag and the skull rolled out of the bag. In August, he's looking at a skull on the ground or saying there's something white.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't run that route. That was the first day, the 11th of August, first day he was on that route. He was across the county. So why is he all of a sudden magically on that particular route?
Right.
Listen to those three calls, the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th. Listen to those calls. Don't connect the dots. Work between the dots. Listen to the calls.
That's interesting.
Now, Ashton,
work between the dots.
The prosecutor, Ashton, didn't start the trial with calls on the 11th, 12th, and 13th. He starts with a call, not even Kronk's call. He starts with Kronk's supervisor's call to 911.
Right.
He eliminates everything prior to December the 11th in the form of calls. He starts with a call from Kronk's dispatcher to 911. What happened to everything else that happened before?
I don't know. That's a good question. I bet our Webster members would know.
Ashton can't use it.
Mm-hmm.
He's afraid to.
Okay.
Somebody's liable to start asking questions.
How did you find? Yeah. How did he know to go there? Why was he there? And then it could lead back to the overheard conversation, and then everybody's in trouble. I see what you're saying.
Correct.
Well, Leonard, that sounds as good as to anything to me, and I don't know for certain if it's true or not, but in this case, nothing would surprise me at all. Now, Leonard, we have somebody on the phone. This person thinks the world of you. Her name is Fern. And Fern, do you have a question for Leonard Padilla?
Hi, Leonard. You are my role model, my hero. Being someone who's not practicing law. Here's the problem. One of the problems I have was at the beginning when everybody was saying the last time Kaylee was seen was June the 9th. That was the 6th, whatever that was.
June the 9th. That was a mistake.
But
that,
wait.
Somebody
Leonard,
made.
I know, but Leonard, let's go right to the 911 call on July 16th. First thing Casey says to the 911 operator, my daughter's been gone for 31 days.
Correct. Now, work 31 days backwards.
I know. And the 31 days is not June the 9th. She knew when her daughter.
Yeah, that was that June the 9th thing was all a mistake of somebody looking at a calendar.
I agree with
you. Looking at the wrong fright. Yeah, that's all that is.
And what about the deal with George? George could not be a retired cop. George was only a detective on the police force in Ohio for 10 years. You can't retire after 10 years.
Correct, but George had...
Maybe military?
Cindy had, here's the thing. Cindy was a young lady from across the tracks. George was married prior to marrying Cindy.
Correct.
George came from a fairly affluent family. They owned several car dealerships, so in that part of Ohio, that was being affluent. She met him in the hospital. They started carrying on. They got married. They had a couple of kids.
Mm-hmm.
George never quit being a playboy.
Mm-hmm.
And it came to the point where George himself was always reckless in his actions and his activities. And I think Cindy figured if we get out of this town and into a new town, it'll be a new life. We begin again. I never asked him why they moved from Ohio. I never got into conversations other than what I heard from her brother, Rick,
right,
and some other family members who said...
By the way, Rick had emails to Cindy in August that laid out the drowning story in his emails.
Correct.
So that story was all set... concocted by the family before... While she was... Casey was still saying it was that she was missing with Zenaida. Go figure.
Fern, is that everything?
No, and by the way, and how was George supporting the family on a $12 an hour? He was doing security for $12 an hour. That was another problem.
George was just picking up on any work he could get.
I agree with you, but Cindy was bringing in the dough, and I want to know how Cindy's on disability. I want to know. I understand that she can claim that she's got, mental issues and distress. However, now that she put her company under scrutiny for possible Medicare and Medicaid and insurance fraud, they got to go back and see if she lied on all the things that she was entering in the computer while she was distressed.
It's a mess that's got, it's a mess that just keeps going and going. It doesn't stop. Every time that somebody tries to do something in that case,
mm-hmm.
She tried to take the blame for the chloroform search when there was 84 of them that turned
mm-hmm.
out not to be 84. That was an obvious lie on her part. But, I think somebody gave her a pass she's the mom. She's trying to cover for the daughter. Well, you got to understand Cindy. Cindy runs the universe. The universe turns according to Cindy.
Well, I believe you. The only problem I have, too, is when she got up there as if she was Al Gore inventing the Internet with the, it's 3 years ago and there's two passwords. I knew she was toast right then because those were Medicare and Medicaid and insurance records. That's 10 years. Those things got to be backed up for 10 years. She was screwed.
She has the ability to sit there and live. When the decomposition thing came out by the FBI on the 27th, the next morning we're sitting in the RV, and she's saying, somebody stuck a body in there, somebody did this, somebody did that. I said, Cindy, I'd go along with somebody. Kids, they're trying to hide the girl. We thought she was alive is the only reason I got involved. Okay, I said, let's have this scenario, Cindy. Your daughter is hiding the daughter so you won't take custody of her. She's in New York. She gets a couple of her school buddies, college buddies, to borrow a body from the morgue at the college, put it in the trunk of the car for 3 days. Now you got decomposition. I go along with that. I got no problem. But what about the death band on a hair that can only be yours, your mother's, Casey's, or Kaylee's? Death bands on hairs don't lie.
Right.
She says, they could have faked that too somehow.
Hey, Fern, we have to move on, but thank you.
No, go ahead. Leonard, you're the man. You're the man.
Thank you. Thank you,
Fern. I'm going to put you on hold so you can keep listening, okay?
Hey, listen, how long am I going to be on here?
Probably another 10, 15 minutes. Is that okay? Is that
That's
cool?
Good.
Okay,
that's
great.
That's cool. Okay, because I got to leave in about 15 minutes.
Okay, fantastic. We won't keep you any longer than that. We had Dr. Lillian Glass on here a few weeks ago, Leonard, and she said something very interesting. And since you know Cindy, I want to run this past you. She said that Cindy was trying to make sure that Casey did not get the death penalty, and that I think everybody understands, but that she, by her body language, was very upset when Casey was found not guilty, because now Cindy is not the center of attention. When Casey was in jail, it was poor Cindy, the poor mom, poor me. And with Casey serving life in prison without parole, Cindy could then take over the, oh, it's poor me, I am the victim, you know, martyr, on and on and on. Well, when Casey was found not guilty, all of a sudden all those plans for all that attention went up in smoke, and that's why Cindy was upset. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, with Cindy, it's a situation where, okay, on the 15th of July, they pretty well know somebody had been dead in the trunk of that car, her and George.
Right.
When she found her daughter that afternoon, that evening, alive, she knew her granddaughter was dead then. There was no doubt in her mind, definitely no doubt in George's mind. But Cindy has the ability, as Casey does, okay, nothing can be done about that. What's next? Next in life for Cindy came revenues from, you know, going on shows,
mm-hmm.
Hotels that she'd always envisioned sitting, having dinner someday. All of a sudden that came. Limousines, driving her. All of the things that the little girl that grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and only saw in movies all of a sudden were happening to her.
Gotcha.
At this stage of the game, she became fascinated with the fact that, wow, okay, nothing will bring her back. Nothing's ever going to bring her back. That I've suffered. I spent a lot of money on my granddaughter. I have put a lot of effort into her.
Mm-hmm.
I might as well reap what the wind and my daughter have sown.
Right.
And today, that's her attitude. Now, the fact that she's in competition to a certain extent over writing a book and book and movie rights with her daughter, yeah, there's a certain amount of competition going on. Yes, absolutely.
Do you think she was upset that Casey wasn't found guilty of anything other than lying to the police? Do you think that bothered her?
The doctor can probably better explain this. Have you ever wanted something and you don't want it?
Yeah, I
want
you know
it,
what?
Don't
absolutely.
Want
absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
I don't know what that's called, but you want it, but you don't want it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Hello.
Hello. Why are we getting somebody calling us? That is the weirdest thing in the world. Okay. Leonard, I have I want to run something by you. I actually had a conversation with Cindy Anthony once, and I won't get into all the details, but she basically told me that she had hired a lawyer to shut down all the websites that were using bad language to describe Casey. She really thought she could do that. She thought she could shut down discussion on the internet about Casey. Does that surprise you?
No. She had her attorney, one attorney contact me on the phone and say, Leonard, you got to quit talking about Cindy and George on Nancy Grace. And I said, well,
really?
I can't do that because I love talking on television about Cindy.
Yeah.
The next one wrote me a letter, says, you've got to quit talking about, I mean, it was it's her current attorney, four-page letter saying, you keep being defamatory and slanderous, and I'm going to sue you on behalf of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I contacted him, and I said, well, you do understand the truth is a defense to any defamatory and slanderous allegations.
That's what people have to remember. The truth, you can't be sued for. You can't win anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, you know. And I got into a discussion with him, and I told him, I said, you know, I have no problem you bring in a lawsuit. I'd love to be able to take depositions of Mr. Kronk, his girlfriend, some law enforcement guys. And we'd have a search for the truth then, rather than a trial which people win or lose. We would then have a truth, a hunt for the truth. That's what I'd like to do. And the lawsuit, which Roy Kronk finally filed against me, will allow me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The lawsuit by me against Baez and Casey for getting reimbursed, I've already had one of their attorneys contact me. They're trying to work out a situation where we settle it before I even file the lawsuit.
Oh, okay. So you're trying to get. So I see what you're. So they're going to try and settle before you can do anything on that case.
Yeah, they. Yeah, one of theirs is. You know, and there's been a suggestion as to how it can be done and all that. And you know, it's just one of those things.
What's this deal with Roy Kronk suing you? Where is that at?
I've got a couple of attorneys that work at the Lorenzo Patino Law School that are going to handle the case for me. They're going to be filing an answer.
And you're not going to settle. You're not going to settle.
No, not on that one. Absolutely not. No.
Okay. So, and in that case, you can get everybody under deposition. And what if he drops it? What if he gets going with it and then he drops it?
Well, that'd be the worst thing that I'd want.
Yeah, because you want to get to the truth. You know, yeah. I personally like Roy Kronk. I think he's telling the truth. But then, Leonard, when I hear you describe what you're describing, you know, I think, well, maybe that's it. It's just so hard to find out.
He's not telling the truth.
Okay.
His girlfriend told him where to look. She got the information from the cops. He worked as a bail bond agent in Kingsport, Tennessee for 15 years with the lady's family that he lived with. There is nobody in this industry that would think they saw a skull out in the middle of a forest or in the middle of a marsh and just walk away from it. We are not geared to that. In this industry, we are busybodies. We will lift every rock in the field looking for somebody. We do not turn away from a question. We are just washers. I mean, we are just out there looking all the time, constantly. That's what our job is. Bail agents get people out of jail. Bounty hunters like me go looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
We go looking for them after the bail agent gets tired of looking for them because he can't find them. He hires us.
If he thinks
he sees something out there, he's not going to stop. He's not going to make a phone call. He's going to go out there himself. That's what we're in this industry for.
Right. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's like I said. I believed him, but you know, let's wait and see with the depositions. Who knows what will come out? Are any depositions scheduled?
No. We haven't even filed our answer yet. We haven't even served. They haven't even served us.
Oh, so you may not get served. He may not. You know,
I told
cost
the attorney
him money.
I'll fly to Florida. I'm going to be flying to Florida to get served if that's what it takes.
It'll cost him money, so maybe he might not want to do it. But he might, you know, I'd love to have him on the show and talk to him. Like I said, I really like him, and I think he's been put through the ringer.
Get him on there. Get him or his attorney or both of them on at the same time.
Yeah, I would love to. I really would. Let me move on here to another subject because I know you have to leave here. You somehow have the inside scoop a lot of times. I don't know how you do it. You have your ear to the ground. You know, you all the information flows to Leonard Padilla, and I love it. I love it. What is Casey doing now? You can fill us in. Come on, give us a scoop. What's she doing? Do you know where she's at? What's going on?
I can tell you this much. Todd Macaluso owns the Pilatus, the aircraft.
Now, who's that?
Todd Macaluso was an attorney that early on in the case contributed $70,000 to her defense.
Okay.
High-profile cases are always a magnet for attorneys that can get TV time. An individual one time told me, Leonard, you've gotten $50,000 worth of advertising off of this Nancy Grace that you're on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's not true. It's closer to $5 million worth of advertising.
Yeah, I believe that.
So if an attorney like Todd Macaluso, he's out of the year 760 area code, so he's down out of San Diego, Carlsbad.
Mm-hmm.
If he can get into a case like this, he's not only an asset to the case because he brought $70,000 to the case, but he's also a high-powered, high-profiled attorney with an airplane and very well-known around the Western Hemisphere. So that was a very big plus for Jose to get him involved. Now, when I Todd flew up here from San Diego to Sacramento one day. We sat and we talked for about 4 or 5 hours. I really liked the guy because he's very worldly as far as lawsuits and things of that nature. In cases like this, where Jose only had 3 years' experience, we really didn't know how big the case was going to get. I told Jose one day it was going to get bigger than the O.J. Simpson case, and he kind of looked at me like I was a nut. You're not going to trial for 4 years, and you're going to have a case bigger than O.J. Simpson. He just kind of looked at me quizzically. But Todd Macaluso knew that. Now, I've talked to Todd several times here in the past week, and he knows what a case like this and the situation with Casey Anthony, he knows what it's all about. As far as where she's at, you know, I could, it wouldn't be that hard for me to figure out where she's at. But
really, figure it out and tell us.
I think she's in California, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You think,
but it's not any of my business.
Well, that's just, no, it's nobody's business. But, you know,
yeah.
I mean, and I think we vacillate, we all vacillate between we want to know and we're so angry we don't ever want to see her again, you know. But let's face it, when new information comes out, we're all there because, again, we just can't believe this happened. Listen, my dear, I know you have to run. Will you come back on Web Sleuth Radio again sometime and fill us
sure.
in on what's happening in life?
And absolutely. Call me and let me know, and I'll be glad to, okay?
Oh, thank you so much. Leonard Padilla,
you're
everybody,
welcome.
Famous bounty hunter, and very shy man, never speaks his opinion or anything. Thank you, Leonard. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay. Wow, that was interesting. I had totally forgotten about the lawsuit with Roy Kronk. Now, that will be interesting. You know, listening to Roy Kronk on the stand, he's a meter reader who found little Kaylee. I'm sorry, he seems so believable. Then I hear Leonard Padilla's story, and that kind of makes sense, but there's really nothing to base it on other than, you know, it would make sense. But you have to have more than that. You have to have proof. So I would be very, very interested to have Roy Kronk on. I think he's gotten a bad rap. I think people have treated him horribly. And hopefully he will come on Web Sleuth Radio. What we'd like to do now is change directions, and I want to talk to the Web Sleuth members and the people who are not members of Web Sleuth but who read True Crime and join us on this radio show each week. You're all mad about Casey Anthony. I get it. I understand it. But let me tell you, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of families out there hurting that need our help. And when I say our help, I don't mean go out and investigate and be obnoxious and nosy. I mean take an interest in a case, read about it. Even if you post a message to a family that says, hey, we're thinking of you, that means so much to them. So take that energy that you have, that anger, and rather than eat your own weight in quesadillas like I do, take it and channel it into something that can help somebody. And I have a perfect case for you. It's the case of Morgan Harrington. She would have been 22 today had she not been murdered in October of 2009. Tonight, we are very, very thrilled and very honored to have Morgan's parents, Dr. Harrington, Dr. Dan Harrington, and his wife, Jill. And Kimster, why don't you go ahead and bring them on board for us? And let's see, here we go. Dr. Harrington and Jill, are you with us?
Yes, I'm
yes.
here as well. We're both on board.
Thank you. How are you both doing tonight?
Well, I think it's been, you know, it's always a difficult day, I think, when you have an anniversary, and particularly an anniversary of Morgan's birth on, you know, looking back now almost 21 months after Morgan was murdered. You know, it's a difficult day.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Jill, go ahead.
Yeah, it you know, milestones are always difficult to pass. And this one for a young girl who was cut down in the full flower of her promise, it's a toughie. It's a toughie.
Well, on behalf, I am so sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Please continue.
No, we're doing okay, though.
Okay, I just wanted to say on behalf of the members and readers of Web Sleuth and listeners of Web Sleuth Radio, our sincere condolences for what happened to Morgan, and we are here to help you. We're 40,000 members plus strong, plus hundreds of thousands of people who stop by and read and participate. So know that you have a silent army of people here that are just here for you. Anything that we can do. And I know this is a hard day for you, and I appreciate you being able to come on the show. I don't think I could, to be honest. And so I admire you for having that type of strength, because this is going to be difficult, because we're going to go through what happened to Morgan, and that's just, it's heartbreaking. If you could tell us just to kind of kind of recap what exactly happened with Morgan that night in October when she went to the Metallica concert. Give us kind of a rundown to remind everybody exactly what it is we're discussing.
Well, Morgan, on the day of the concert, had left our home about noon, and she and her roommate traveled to actually James Madison University to pick up some friends, and from there the group went to Charlottesville, which is about 60 miles east of James Madison.
Excuse me, Doctor, can I have you speak up just a little bit for me, please?
Sure,
thank
you. Can you hear me now?
That's better. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. And they traveled to Charlottesville to John Paul Jones Arena, where Metallica was playing. Morgan really loved music and had been looking forward to this concert for a long time. During the concert, there were two bands before the main event, and just prior to the second band going on, Morgan left her seat at the arena and never came back to the seat, and for whatever reason, exited the arena at the front door, and due to the policy of the arena, was not allowed re-entry.
Did she try to get back in? Yes, she did. Okay.
She did try to get back in. And, okay. You know, the events of the evening are difficult in that prior to leaving her seat at the arena, Morgan had been busy texting a young man that she was friends with at a nearby college, not in Charlottesville. And so they were texting back and forth. And once she left the arena, Morgan never used her telephone again. She did receive one phone call about 45 minutes after leaving her seat from her friend Sarah in the arena, and Morgan said that she would find a way home. But this doesn't make sense in that, you know, they traveled in Morgan's car, actually, to the concert. They had a designated driver, and so the keys were not with Morgan. Once out of the arena, she was refused reentry, and again, so much of this doesn't make sense in that she actually had a credit card that she could have bought another ticket to reenter.
Mm-hmm.
Descriptions of Morgan was that she was confused and was unsteady on her feet, there are witnesses of her walking across a gravel parking lot away from the arena. She interacted with a number of the University of Virginia basketball players. She subsequently was seen and was last reported hitchhiking on a bridge leading away from the arena.
May I interrupt here? This
sure.
is not like your daughter to do this, right?
That's
Jill,
right.
Do you think that somebody maybe had slipped her a drug, or what do you think may have happened?
You know, we're never going to know what mm-hmm. happened. Morgan had no kind of luck that night.
So hard. It's just because that's so, just the little
hard.
Bit I know about her, that is not her.
Right.
No.
Right.
Do you believe, I mean, do you feel, what, I'm sorry, go ahead.
What is really difficult for us because, you know, we're closing in on 2 years since Morgan was murdered. There has been no arrest. There is someone in that community who feels confident and cocky enough to display trophies as he displayed Morgan's shirt several weeks after her murder.
Let's jump to that T-shirt. That's very important because the T-shirt was found before Morgan was found, correct?
Yes. The
okay,
t-shirt.
Why don't we talk about the T-shirt? Why don't you tell us about the T-shirt?
Well, the T-shirt was a very specific one that actually had been given to her by Sarah, who traveled with her to the concert. And it was a vintage T-shirt, and it was a Pantera T-shirt, so it's the name of a band. And about 2 weeks after the after Morgan was taken, in the part of Charlottesville that's close to the fraternity area, kind of bordering the fraternity area as well as a fairly poor section of Charlottesville,
mm-hmm.
The shirt was found and displayed on a bush.
When you say displayed, what do you mean by that?
Draped, open and draped on.
Purposely put there.
Correct.
That's what the police felt, that it was purposely put there. And at that time, there was we were not aware of this, and it was not publicly known. And so the police, we are told, did investigations in the area, but did not have any success in any getting any clues. We found out about this probably another maybe month to 6 weeks after the shirt was found, and there was concern that perhaps it was not Morgan's shirt, and subsequent tests did prove that it was Morgan's. Again, how many Pantera T-shirts are there out there?
Right.
Vintage? I mean, there aren't that many, particularly in Charlottesville.
And it was linked to a previous crime as well.
Oh, whoa, wait. It was linked to a previous crime? Talk to me about that.
Dan?
Jill?
You're the better fact guy, Dan.
Well, I think that's an issue that we shouldn't talk about.
Okay, understood. Okay, so please continue.
With the Pantera T-shirt being found, of course, that was one area that I was concerned about, and was concerned about in that, there was not any awareness to local individuals in Charlottesville, again, the person who murdered our daughter was somewhere in that neighborhood, and again, not bringing something to public awareness, you have to weigh how much of this is important to the case and how much of it is important to public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so subsequently in January, Morgan's body was found about 6 miles south of the arena and the area where Morgan's shirt was found.
Let's talk. Oh, I'm sorry. It was how many miles away?
6 miles south.
So that's not that far, really.
In a rural, Charlottesville's a small city, so 6 miles out of the city is pretty rural. And she was found in a very remote part of a 700-acre farm. So she wasn't just thrown to the side of the road, she was purposely put in this farm, I think, with the belief that she would not be found.
Driving there, it was overwhelming to see how remote it was, and you really had a sense that the person who killed Morgan had a scenario in his mind. He had all the details planned, and he was just waiting to fill the role of victim, find opportunity for someone, and he had everything else worked out.
So you feel that because of the remoteness of where Morgan's body was found, that this person absolutely had to know that particular farm and that particular area, correct?
Well, I think the day that her body was found, the police became very, interested in the location. For the 100 days that Morgan was missing, being missing isn't a crime. And so police would only search when there was a for-cause reason. So there was not a huge outpouring, I think, from law enforcement to search for Morgan. So when her body was found and it was in this particular place, the police began focusing a great deal on the fact that it was in this rural area and that on this 700-acre estate, it wasn't just a farm, it's an estate, the place that she was placed was quite remote. On the evening that Morgan was taken, it was raining. It was October, and so the grass in the area of the farm was probably waist high, and it was an area that, having walked there only once now, to get there would be very, very difficult. I mean, even with a four-wheel drive, it would be somewhat difficult to get there. Not impossible, but difficult. So the whole question continues to be raised is, yes, it's very important because someone knew that farm. Could it have been a local person who grew up in the area? Could it have been someone who partied at that farm, which was not uncommon, or hunted at that farm? It was not a working farm in the sense that they had, workers, regular staff that would work there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police have focused a great deal on that particular issue.
That's very frustrating, because obviously here's the thing, and please correct me if I'm wrong, please jump in. There could be somebody out there, maybe even somebody listening right now, who knows somebody who has partied there and hasn't made the connection that, gosh, they know that area, maybe they should be looked at. You know, it could be something as simple as that. And you're having trouble keeping this in the media. Am I right?
Well, I think that when you have a case that is now 21 months old, and there are 3,000 people who go missing every day, and many of those people choose to be missing. But you know, this is really a rampant event in the United States.
See, I think, Tricia, that it's almost as if they're, you know, in the culture that women, young women, are in some sense expendable goods.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, another pretty girl, too bad, next. And
move on, you're right, it's very frustrating.
But you know what, it's our life.
Yes.
And we need to change the culture, you know, that it is not okay. We do not let, you know, our young people, young women, be murdered without rioting in the streets. We are not going to sit down about this.
You know, and just listening to your previous guest and you know, of course, our lives are way focused differently now than they were 2 years ago. You know, we do pay attention to what's on television, but just think of what's happened in the last 3 to 4 months with the Casey Anthony trial, and the fact that there are people who have gone missing that there is no publicity about them. You know, and there's no national awareness of other cases, because that case was so big that it really, nothing else would be able to get attention. And for us, we have worked very hard and have, I think, had a very good relationship with all the media to keep Morgan's case alive. You know, on Friday of this week, 2 days ago, we had our second annual Morgan Harrington golf tournament, which raised funds for Omni, which is one of the charities that we have connected, you know, our cause to, because it's what one of the things Morgan was interested in, you know, and of course the media, you know, covered pieces of that, you know, but how many times can you go to Charlottesville and expect the media to come when there's no new information given? Or if you really look at what the Virginia State Police has done in the last 21 months, they literally have had four news conferences. Very little, very tightly controlled information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a cultural issue with, you know, with the with that agency relative to, you know, other agencies that you see across the country. You know, so for us, trying to keep Morgan's story alive is not to keep her story alive just because it's Morgan. It's really to keep the story alive because there continues to be a predator in the Charlottesville area.
Our daughter is dead. You know, that's a toughie to swallow, but we are wrapping our minds around it. But there's a murderer in that community, and there's a whole new crop of students starting in the fall that come from different places, don't know Morgan's story, and you know, the propensity is to tell everyone everything is okay. You know, go back. It's like the Twin Towers. Go back into the building. No, there's someone there, and I'm not saying, you know, walk around, quake in fear, stay in your room. But certainly be alert, certainly be aware, certainly look out for each other.
It's absolutely.
We want to save the next girl. That's the reason to keep on pushing this. It's too late for Morgan.
And I know I speak for thousands of people when I say we admire you for having the strength to do this and to care about the other women in your community. If I could just add something that I have noticed through the years of covering true crime, and this is sad, but it's absolutely true. The more dysfunctional the family, the more the case gets covered. you look at the high profile cases. We have Scott Peterson. His family was full of dysfunction. You have Casey Anthony. Look at all the characters in that family. And then along come the Harrington family, a stand-up, wonderful, strong family with a beautiful daughter. And, yes, you do get some media coverage, but not like with the Anthony family. And you're right. That's what we need to change. We need to get people just as upset about Kaylee, about the other missing women and men and boys and girls, as they have been about Kaylee. And to do that, we need to, meaning when I'm talking we, I mean media, forums like myself, we need to keep pushing and make Morgan real to them and get everybody to know Morgan and to understand how your hearts are just ripped out.
Trish,
and
I think what people, people are, maybe can turn the page and say pretty girl, too bad, next, because they it's very unlikely that they will have a murdered daughter or a murdered mm-hmm. child. What does transcend, though, is everybody is going to be delivered loss. I guarantee you everybody's parents are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the people who are called to listen to this case are trying to glean some way to handle adversity that is inevitably coming to them in a way with some dignity and strength, and to, you know, we're trying to make something good out of something horrendous, and that's a hard distillation. And you know, we're not doing too badly with it.
You're doing a fantastic job.
People know how to do that
mm-hmm.
because they know their time is going to come. They're not going to have a murder, but they will have something, and they want some tools in their hands to deal with it.
You're absolutely right. We're talking with Dr. Dan Harrington and his wife, Jill, about the tragic murder of their daughter, Morgan. If you would like to call in with a question, feel free at 760-825-0933 or 877-665-1565. We do have a question.
Patricia?
Yes.
Can I jump in for a sec?
Yes, please do. This is Kimster, our co-host.
This is Kimster. I am just totally, hi, I'm very moved by what you guys were just saying, and I just want to jump in a little bit for our listeners, and not just the listeners right now, but they do listen to the program during the next week, so you'll be hearing about Morgan this week. But, the thing is, too, is what you guys were saying is making it personal, because I got involved in true crime. I don't even know why. I didn't have anything like that happen in my family. But I got onto Web Sleuth, and when I actually met a member whose family members had been missing since 2004 in the Wicks case, when I actually met her, the mother, and talked with her on the phone, that's when I cried and said, this is real. And that's what I wish all of our members would really get into. This isn't just, we're not just doing Agatha Christie novels or something, we're trying to really make a difference. And these are real people, and we need to protect other people. There's killer out there. We need to protect the people in the community and know that this is real. And I think that when you really get that down deep into your heart and your soul, it really it makes a difference, and you will – members, you will go out and look at some more of these cold cases, the unidentified forum, and these cases, and don't let them go away, and don't leave without finding a case that you can, put your heart into and make a difference.
May I tell you, you don't get more real than holding your daughter's skeleton pieces in your hands. We have been there up close and personal. I would want to read you Morgan's birthday poem that I wrote her. It's not too long, don't worry. And I always write poetry and poems to the kids and to Dan for different occasions. And our extended family has grown, unfortunately, to include you all now, so bear with me. This is Morgan's birthday poem. Stuck at the big 2-0, birthday poem to Mogo. It's another birthday and it ain't too happy. In fact, it feels kind of crappy. See, you'll always be still 20. They tell me you'll be forever young, and I just have to bite my tongue, because from what I can see, Forever Young ain't all it's cracked up to be. Morgan, you were such a beauty, but now you're no way cutie. I hate to be the one to tell, honey, you look like hell. In 2 years, you've changed a lot. There was that awkward stage of bones and rot. And now, frankly, don't mean to hurt, though forever young, you look old as dirt. Oh, yeah, how dumb. That's exactly what you have become. Morgan, you're 20 and holding your destiny. Wish instead you were holding me. 2 for 1, Mom.
Wow.
That's real.
That is. I don't even know what to say. That it's just, thank you for sharing that.
I mean, the part of this journey for us has been taking whatever blinders you have and baffles between you and other people and showing, you know, this is what it feels like, this is what it hurts, and yeah, it's rough, but we are finding a new way, but it's difficult. You can't keep going where you were, and you know, we wrestle with it every day. You know, everything in our lives is a reminder. You open the refrigerator, the butter is a reminder. You know, Morgan didn't like butter, she liked margarine. You know, everything in your life is a reminder. You don't get over it, you get beyond it, but it's never over. We don't want
Jill,
other families to go through this.
Do you feel that by helping the other families and appearing, does that help at all?
I think by we can wring some good out of this wrong, and that is how we can transcend and make it kind of okay. That, you know, there was point of impact that someone killed our daughter and we were asleep. But by God, that was it. We have been determined that that was all the damage that he was going to do to us. No collateral damage. Morgan's friends were not going under the bus. Our marriage was going to remain. Our son was going to be okay. And we were going to find a way. And we wanted to not only survive, but use it and make some good. We've done that. We're building a school in Africa. We're changing laws. We're making a scholarship at the medical school here. And that's how you trump evil. I can feel okay with it that we have trumped him in a way. He did us irreparable damage, but we're squeezing something out of it ourselves. I don't know another way to survive. If we couldn't do that, I'd throw in the towel right now.
Okay, we're talking. Thank you so much. This is just so moving. It's hard for me to continue, to be honest. If you have a call for Dan or Jill Harrington, our number is 760-825-0933, and our toll-free number is 877-665-1565. We do have a question, and that was any hair or fibers found on Morgan's T-shirt that was displayed?
There was. That was the way that the T-shirt actually was identified as Morgan's, and that it had Morgan's hair on it.
Did it have anything else other than Morgan's? Nothing that could identify somebody?
Well, that's part of the part of the case that
we can't talk about.
It's not to talk about, right?
Understood. There is something that I was reading about, and there's been an update on that, and that is the DNA that is being tested. That's new. It's a new test, and that's to find family members who might have the same DNA, and that way they find a suspect. So, if they test someone's DNA and it's not in CODIS, but they find that maybe the DNA is related to somebody in CODIS, then they can track somebody down that way. You had trouble with that at first, but now they're using this way of testing to try and find Morgan's killer. Is that correct?
Let's go back just a little bit, and I will
okay.
get to this piece, but I think there is an important piece that we didn't talk about
okay.
that has led up to the familial DNA, and that's as part of Morgan's case. Actually, it was last July, the police released the fact that there was a forensic link between Morgan's case and a rape case in Fairfax City from 2005, and that rape case, the woman survived the attack and was able to produce a composite. That was released to the public a year ago. So with the fact that there is a connection between that case and Morgan's case and that there's no identifiable person, about the same time all this occurred was the California case in which the familial DNA solved the case of the individual who had committed so many crimes in California. And we started exploring with the Virginia State Police why Morgan's case could not have familial DNA. And the initial thought was, don't count on that happening anytime soon.
I think they said 7 years, maybe.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
dear.
And so last fall, I was invited by actually the Richmond Times reporter to meet him at the crime commission in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I was allowed to present my story of Morgan's abduction and death, and my request that Virginia pursue familial DNA. During that session, there were actually two attorneys who presented to the crime commission, two, one from Colorado and one from California, who presented compelling arguments as to why familial DNA should be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
In our state, it did not require a law change in that it would be allowed if there was funding and if the governor gave approval for it to occur. And from the work that we did and the work of the Crime Commission, Virginia did allow for the familial DNA to be started, and they are doing it on a very limited basis, case by case. And Morgan's case is being done, and the results of that are pending. And whatever the results of that are, every DNA sample that comes through from now on that is registered in Virginia is checked against that particular program that they have in Richmond. So we were capable of getting.
It's a huge tool to put in the hands of law enforcement. In fact, I think it should be available nationally. It's kind of like, do you remember when they started having higher resolution mammogram, but it was optional?
Yeah.
And then now it is universal for everyone. If this tool exists, it should be in every state. It shouldn't be piecemeal. And we've gotten many calls, like with the Long Island mass serial murders, people calling and saying, how can we get this in our state? And we actually have talked some to Vice President Joe Biden's office about mandating and working to make that be a national standard rather than a state-by-state issue. People, I think, are afraid when they hear DNA because they think Big Brother. This
mm-hmm.
is to run samples that are in the system already from convicted felons and look at the samples that have been submitted in a different way. It's not requiring new sampling.
Right. It's just common sense that they should have it. I mean, what are they waiting for? That's ridiculous.
I
That just makes me very angry. Okay, we're going to go to Kenny now. We're talking to Dan and Jill Harrington. Their daughter, Morgan, was brutally murdered back in October of 2009. And Kenny is a good friend of the Harringtons. And Kenny was actually the one who contacted me about having you on as a guest, and I'm so glad he did. Hi, Kenny. You're on Web Sleuth Radio. How are you?
Hey, Tricia.
Hi, Kenny.
Thanks for having me on. Hello, Dan and Jill. Dan, I just got one question I would like to ask you. It does not pertain to the case. I just want to know if you did save me some cupcakes.
I knew that was what you were going to ask,
yeah,
and the answer
yes,
is yes.
Yeah, they're in the freezer.
We have our priorities
okay.
straight. Not to worry.
Well,
good, good, good. That was important.
Tricia, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for allowing Dan and Jill to be guests on your show. I know probably people are actually getting tired of all my emails and telephone calls, but, you know, this is one method that we have been using to continue Morgan's story. And we have been doing this while we are also, I like to call it putting boots on the ground in Charlottesville. We have done multiple events in Charlottesville, some right in the core of where we think, and I want to emphasize that, we think that this guy may actually live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know for sure, but we think that the areas that we're hitting could be very important interest points of where this guy possibly could live. And, you know, we don't do it with the intention of going on a witch hunt. We go with the intention of not only continuing Morgan's story, but we emphasize safety for young ladies in that area. We have pamphlets, we have brochures, we have flyers, we have everything that you can imagine. And we use it as a tool to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to what some of the earlier comments that were made by Dan and Jill, yes, there's someone in that community that knows what's going on and what went on that night. What we are attempting is not to draw attention to the murderer. We want the people that could have possibly, this guy could have possibly assaulted them, or they, near assaults, something that may trigger something in their mind, think back that, hey, this guy sounds familiar to me. Maybe I better call and discuss this with one of the detectives. Yes, I believe that what we're doing is very instrumental in bringing this guy to justice. I really do. Or else I wouldn't, the guys that have been working with me, we wouldn't be doing it.
Right.
So I feel that it's important to keep this story going, and that's what we're going to do. And by God, if anyone has a problem with that, they have one of two choices. Turn this guy in, or are you going to see my ugly face in Charlottesville until this guy's off the street?
Someone knows something.
Trisha,
yes,
I think
they do,
one issue that I think is important that we haven't talked about is that there is a $150,000 reward for the arrest and conviction of this individual.
That's right. Let's talk about that. $50,000.
That's a fair amount of money.
Yes, $50,000 donated by Metallica, correct?
That's correct.
The band she was going to go see tonight. Let's talk about that. What does a person have to do? They have to just come up with that one. It can just. Here's the thing that people have to realize. It's not that you're turning in a murderer. You're just going to give the police an idea to go talk to somebody who maybe will know something, who will know something. So if somebody knows somebody that knows that area where Morgan was found, that doesn't mean you're calling the police and saying, hey, he did it. You know, you're just giving them a lead that may leapfrog into a conviction, and you just might get that money, correct?
I think we have intuition. There's somebody that, as he's going through his day, makes the hair on the back of people's necks stand up, and that he's not quite right.
True.
And that they keep tamping down that intuition. They need to listen to it and make a call.
Absolutely. Yes. Just one. You can do it anonymously, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Trish, I want to say one thing, and then I'll hang up and listen to the rest of the show.
Okay.
Amanda St. Clair, she actually came up. We're trying to make it easy on these people. she actually came up with a little postcard that has the mailing address directly to Lieutenant Jay Rader. All they have to do is put a stamp on it. If they have any information, they can throw it in a mailbox, and no one absolutely does not know who this person was that gave the anonymous tip. So
where can they get
them every?
Where can they get the postcard?
Well, Tricia, when we were down there in North Garden back in June 4th, we actually left some at several different locations.
Okay.
In that community where they could pick it up. And many people we saw actually pick the postcard up and
good.
Take it back with them. So,
and
you know,
you can
we're
also...
trying everything we can, and I'm telling you, we're going to get to the bottom of this. One way or the other, we're going to get to the bottom of it.
Jill, what were you going to say?
You also can call into the tip line, the Virginia State Police tip line, anonymously as well.
That's right. Well, you know, you're doing an absolutely amazing thing, and the fact that you're reaching out to every parent and brother and sister who has a loved one out there, and who everybody literally, and you're right, you don't want to be hysterical about it, but everybody is in danger while this person is still out there. And so it's up to all of us. Morgan has now become our daughter, our friend, our sister, and it's up to all of us to try and do something. Dr. Harrington, is there something that we haven't covered that you would like to touch on? I do have a few more questions, but before I get into that, I just want to make sure that we're not missing anything here that you would like to discuss.
The only thing that I, again, want to reemphasize, and Jill and I both have said this several times, there remains a murder in the Charlottesville area, and I worry about complacency.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to hear about the Harrington's story over and over again. And yet we have to be there, because if we don't say it, no one else is going to do it. And it is our daughter. You know, we do have a responsibility to seek justice for her death.
Mm-hmm. And Jill, is there something else that you would like to say before I move on? With just a few more questions left.
No, not really.
Okay. Well, we have the Virginia State Police tip line, and that is 434-352-3467. Again, that's 434-352-3467. We're talking with Dr. Dan Harrington and Jill Harrington about the very tragic murder of their daughter Morgan in October of 2009. And this is kind of just a little bit of a side note, but just kind of how far you have gone to keep people thinking about this case and thinking about your daughter, and therefore thinking about the safety of others. You actually had you've been on Web Sleuths before, correct?
No, this is the first time.
No, I mean, you've been on the forum.
Oh, on the Web Sleuths. On the forum,
yes.
WebSleuths.com.
And you did mention that you liked it and you liked the people on there, and we thank you for that. But you also started your own forum to talk
That's
about
right.
Morgan's case. And then,
That's
and then
correct.
What happened? What happened?
Well, actually, the website, the www.findmorgan.com website, was started by someone we didn't know here in Roanoke. The 2 days after Morgan disappeared, and that included a forum. And so I didn't know, you know, I'm not very savvy with all these things. So for weeks I didn't know anything about this. And then all of a sudden, you know, people showed me this forum that people were engaged in. And
mm-hmm.
over about a six-month period, as you well know from what you do, we had 650,000 entries into that forum. And it was very interesting. You know, a missing girl is much more interesting than a dead girl. And so
mm-hmm.
During the 3 months that Morgan was missing, a phenomenal amount of activity and speculation and, you know, people trying to come up with theories and suspects, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Morgan's body was found, things tended to slow a bit. But what we did see over time was a lot of pathology that came out from certain individuals that would create chaos on the forum.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I closed the forum about 12 months ago. That was after some threats to our family.
But believe me, I have been there a lot, many times, over and over. And I would like to offer you any time that you would like to open a forum. It would be your own forum about Morgan. We can put it on Web Sleuths, and we have the people to monitor it for you. And anybody have any threats, they have to talk to me, and they're not going to like it. So we can protect you. We can protect you and keep all that crap away from you, because that's the last thing that you need. So you just let me know. We do have a thread going about Morgan. But if you'd like to open up a forum, like I said, it'll be your forum. We can handle it for you. That would be absolutely no problem. One final thought I want to talk about, and that is the necklace. She was wearing a necklace, correct? And he took that. Right?
Well, you know, if there was the shirt that was kind of trophy-ish, you wonder what else was there.
What did the necklace look like?
Dan, you can give a better description.
It was a crystal necklace that actually Jill's brother. Morgan's brother. Morgan's brother bought for her. So it was. I don't think he bought it in. New in a store. I think
it was a
vintage piece. Mm-hmm. And a Swarovski. Is that how you pronounce
it? Oh
that?
Yeah, the Swarovski crystals. Yes.
Yes, and it was it was one of those necklaces, and so you know it's quite a striking piece, and that piece was not with Morgan's body. Once it was found.
Is there a picture of the necklace on the
yes,
website? Or okay,
there is. There are pictures of it. And
Jill, what were you going to say?
You just hate. I try not to replay those tapes in my mind, but you know, was it taken off of her, or was it just in some fighting strangulation thing ripped mm-hmm. off of her, and is it in the bottom of his car somewhere? I don't know.
Those are hard places to go in your mind and torturous places, and I'm so sorry. I am so sorry that you have to go to those places. And hopefully, Web Sleuths members and readers and friends, now you hear the real pain of real people, Dan and Jill Harrington. So get off Casey. We can't do anything about that. Let's help these parents and maybe do something to help with their pain, if it's just even keeping Morgan's case active on the forum so people can keep reading and understand that how simple this could be solved if one person would just come forward. As we wrap up, could you tell us something about Morgan that perhaps we don't know about yet?
Joe, that's up to you.
I mean, you know, she was just a young woman just coming into the fullness of adulthood. You know, we as parents, to be at a point where you have an adult relationship with your child is amazing. You know, they're not peers, but, you know, you have fun with them. And she really had been quickened and awakened her last summer. She was a beautiful girl, but that was really a golden time with her. We didn't know it was the last time with her, but it was a marvelous time to look back on. I'm really thankful that we had it. I wish we had more.
Oh, I do. I wish you had more, too. And again, we are here for you. You now have my contact information. My cell phone is with me 24/7. I don't care if it's 2 in the morning. You call me if there's something that you need. Like I said, we have a lot of people who are just waiting to help. And what I'm really hoping this will do is get people off the Casey Anthony forum and over to Morgan's forum. And what is Morgan's website again?
It's www.findmorgan.com. And there's also a Facebook page, which is Help Find Morgan Dana Harrington. And even though Morgan's been found, those were the original names, and we wanted to keep that because that's what the identification was.
Understood. Well, thank you, Dr. and Mrs. Harrington. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for the chance to talk.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
And we will have you back again very, very soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this edition of Web Sleuths Radio. Very emotional. I mean, there was a time there that I didn't think I was going to be able to go on, and I've never had that happen. So, again, people, let's not forget about Casey, but let's just put Casey on hold for a little bit, okay? Head over to websleuths.com/forums and go to the Morgan Harrington thread, and you can join us there. And don't forget, we have a new partner with Web Sleuths that is So Sue Me. So come to Web Sleuths, the members, go to the parking lot and join us on the thread with So Sue Me, and you can ask her questions and say, what are you thinking? joining up with Tricia Griffith. That's nuts. Okay, everybody, we'll be back next week. Don't forget Web Sleuth Radio. Our guest next week, again, I have no clue, but I can promise you this. It'll be very interesting. Never a dull moment. It's Web Sleuth Radio. True crime, current events, always discussed with common sense. Good night.